Howdy, and welcome back to another episode of the one, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to effects pedals. That's right. If you love effects pedals, you are in the right place. You are at the Effects Pedal Fan Club. I am Justin, and we have a great guest on today. We have Chuck from Mahar Guitars, and it's a special show because when we started this podcast, we really wanted it to feel like going into a guitar shop, seeing your buddies there, trying some guitars, trying some effects. Sometimes you buy, sometimes you don't, but either way, you have a good time. And that's exactly what this episode is. Chuck talks about the state of vintage guitars. He talks about some of the favorite effects that he has seen come through his shop. Gives us a tour of his pedal board. There's no better way to get to know somebody than a tour of their pedal board. And then in the then he goes to the roll the dice questions, and we do that in our bonus content for the Patreon fans that have joined the club. But before that, before we get into the episode, we usually try to touch a little bit on news and notes, but this is more of a personal one because I've been recently rebuilding my board, and I went on a fairly extensive search for a very specific pedal, and I want to let you know what I landed on. I have been trying to simplify or at least build a small board that I can just kind of, my goal is to have an amp in one hand, a pedal board in another, and a guitar in a gig bag on the back, and I could just go to an open mic jam, a blues jam, a jam with friends, just a very portable gigging solution. So the board itself, it's so funny when you do these kind of rebuilds because you're like, oh, I'm going to streamline down to, you know, 2-3 pedals, and then you're like, well, I need some sort of switcher and blender and all this stuff, and I've really kind of fought against that. So I realized what I need is a fuzz, an overdrive, a dual overdrive, a tuner, and a delay kind of reverb. But my reverb always has to be very expressive. It has to be something that I can control its mix with in a performative way with an expression pedal. That's always kind of a need for me. So we do have the Source Audio Collider, which is on my big board. And I don't know if you're like any other, I mean, switching pedals is just this, you know, from board to board is just this added friction. So I was looking for just a very simple tool that's going to allow me to get my delay and reverb with an expression pedal. So if you have any ideas, just, you know, email, hit us up on Instagram, let us know. But what I landed on after a long, long search is the Avalanche Run by Earthquaker Devices. It is a great, great pedal, and it's just what I needed. But what's really cool is there's this beautiful reverb in it. I have the V1. So the V2 is exactly the same, a little bit different enclosure, but has like better stereo reverb imaging, but I didn't need that. So I just went with single. I'm just running this mono in currently, actually it's wild. I'm running in my effects loop, which I never thought I would do, but that's what I'm doing. And what's great about the Avalanche Run is you can assign the expression pedal to almost any of the parameters on the pedal itself. So I just assigned it to the reverb decay, and then what you'll need is an expression pedal that you can basically control the sweep of the pedal. Because if you go full decay, then it becomes basically kill dry, and you just have the wet mix, which doesn't work great in effects loops or if you're running a mono board. If you're running dual mono, great, cool, totally awesome. But so that's what I landed on, and I'm controlling it with a fairly cheap Moog expression pedal, and I'm really, really just kind of happy with my board right now. It's pretty small. It's got the canvas tuner, all top mounted, JHS double barrel, and right now I'm bouncing between fuzzes, which is the Petty John. Is it the Smash? Maybe the Petty John Smash. Kind of this fuzz face type topology with a, you know, their mids inductor, or I'm using the Frederick Shinny, or the JHS Supreme. So I'm kind of bouncing between, kind of see where I want to land with that fuzz. And then also I've added the Jam Pedals Boomster, and that's going to be a whole nother episode, or maybe we'll just talk about it over on Patreon. But it is a very, 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 very cool pedal, and we can talk about that more later. But that was kind of my personal search for a simple delay reverb that I can control with an effects pedal, and that's where I landed, the Avalanche Run. Wonderful pedal. Great people over at Earthquaker Devices. And without further ado, let's welcome Chuck from Mahar Guitars to the show. So So let's welcome Chuck from Mahar's Vintage Guitars in Chico, California to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Chuck.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, right on. Yeah, yeah. You quite a few questions came in from the fan club, and I think some of them were your friends, and there's a lot of inside jokes in there.
Yes, there are. Yes.
So, you know, I was just talking to Chuck about this, and I always thought the fan club podcast is really just an example of going into your favorite guitar shop, hanging out with your buddies, talking about what's on the wall, what's in the cases, just really enjoying the entire guitar community. So it's always exciting to get guitar shop owners on the show. So before we get into your shop, it's great to get to know people by just giving us a tour of your pedal board, your current board.
Yeah, for sure. My pedal board's kind of a mad scientist disaster. It's a byproduct of just my, you know, the chaotic life, you know, that we lead in this business. A lot of travel, a lot of looking at, buying, selling, touching guitars and then putting them down. But it does exist. It's here in my spare bedroom that is the lab of disaster or Santa's shop of horrors, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I'm not playing currently, you know, regularly, but it's constantly in there haunting me, and the pedals come in that tempt me. So it's always kind of in flux, and every now and then we get the old band back together and I'll tighten it up and bring it together and take it out, you know, and play. And its current iteration, I've ended up with two Saturn Works, five channel loopers. So I've got a loop for every pedal. I've always struggled with, you know, daisy chaining all your pedals together. You know, I always kind of cobbled my pedal board and it's always a last minute decision. And there's always some kind of funky bug or too many in a row, you know, noise and problems. So the Saturn Works louvers, you know, I just put them next to each other on this big, huge board. And I go first. I've always used an Ernie Ball volume panning pedal. And that started out for me when I was playing in a band back in the 90s here in Chico. I'd have two amps, a dirty amp and a clean amp. And so I had a Rivera 100 watt Duo 12, which, you know, kind of did, I liked that for the that had two tones. And then I always had something that was a single channel amp, like a Vox or a, you know, something that, or a, you know, a Tweed, you know, reissue or something that was just a single channel, turn it up, get the output tube distortion kind of situation. So that pedal allows me to go from clean on my heel to dirty at the toe or any blend in between, which I've always completely, you know, I've always dug that. Of course, it requires you to carry two amps around, which a lot of people are trying not to do. And but I do like that. I guess I'm not going into that first. That's actually last. Yeah, currently the amps are a Tweed amp that my longtime amp tech built for me. It's a preamp section of a 50s Pro, you know, all old components, old transformers. And then an output section of a Tweed Deluxe mid 50s. So that's just killer, you know, output tube warmth, raw Tweed tone. And then the clean amp I'm running right now, I've got a 79 Mesa Mark II with a big 15 inch 60s JBL Fender labeled JBL in it. And that just got the clean for days and headroom beyond belief. So that gives me a whole palette to work with amp wise. The first pedal on the looper switches is a Diamond compressor, you know, compress at the front end.
What do you think about that pedal? Just out of curiosity. I've heard great things about it. It's just an incredible compressor, right?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I've hopped through a few over the last year or two. Probably too many for me to even remember.
Sure.
But I have the luxury of getting a couple things in and bringing them home and really seeing what works better for me. I, and you know, with full The thing about all this stuff, as we all know, is like that, you know, I might like that pedal better than every other compressor I've stumbled into, but you know, we all have our own taste.
Yeah.
For what I'm doing, it really works the best. It's a great sounding pedal. And it trumped a few other really, really good designs, and it just works. It just does what it does. I think the other one I had was a Philosopher's Tone. Who makes that? I forget.
Is it Pigtronics?
Yeah.
And okay. Yeah.
You know, I had some dirt and some different things in there, and I'm like, you know, this is just, I just don't need that. I've got that elsewhere. And the Diamond Compressor is just warm and legit sounding, a really, really great pedal. Then I struggled with Clean Boost. I was like, I have to get something in between a overdrive or distortion pedal and to push and add a little more breath to what's going into my amps. I ended up with a Klon KTR. You know, it's one of those, you know, that everybody's like, oh, it shouldn't be so expensive, blah, 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 whatever. I ended up with a couple of them, and I took one home that was a little worn out and put it in the board. And I was just like, oh my God, I found it. And then Benson came out with their Germanium Boost, and I just ordered one new, you know, and I brought it home. I'm like, well, you know, I don't use these pedals a lot. Should I really have this KTR on my board, or should I sell it? You know, classic for me, it's a classic deal, you know, guitar dealer battle. Like, well, I could sell this thing and then go buy three more pedals and then flip those, you know, do I need a KTR? Yeah, well, I have one in a mint one in a box that's like on my savings account, you know, shelf.
Yeah, right.
Then I have this one that's worn. Well, I put them next to each other, and I'm A-B-ing them, and both of them are pretty magical, awesome things. I like to just set them low, you know, use them as like an expander, you know, like just a clean boost. I've got one on each button on my Saturnworks looper, and back and forth, really finding just subtle differences about each I really like. And then I hit them both, and I was just like, oh my God, wow. Yeah. So it's a layer. I'm sure if I was playing regularly, I would find, you know, one's good for this, one's good for that. What I really enjoy the way I'm using them is just a couple gain stages available for me right there. And I've found that I've really moved off of distortion and overdrive pedals almost completely with those cascading in the board.
Oh, hold on a second. Do you have three of those? One's on your shelf and two are on your board?
I have one KTR on the board and the Benson Germanium Boost on
the board.
Oh, those
are, okay. Yeah. That's how you're doing your gain staging. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And the other KTR is just like, well, it's probably, you know,
sure,
it's just one of those things. It's a speculative move. It's clean in the box with the papers sitting on the shelf. I don't know. Someday when I take a dirt nap, maybe it'll be worth a whole bunch of money for my kids.
Yeah. Right. I was actually at Old Town Music in Portland, Oregon, the day they got like three of those in, like the day they were released. And I was going through this stage in my life. I was like, I don't need one of those. I'm going to get a Rainbow Machine instead. And I was like, oh man, I could have had so, like a KTR, but that's out of my league now.
Yeah. You know, if you really watch, and that's how I ended up with both of these. If you really watch, you know, like we do, reverb or whatever,
it's part of our routine.
Yep. One just slaps you in the face and you're like, oh, you know, it's 50 or 100 bucks less maybe than somebody else asking. You just grab it and there it is, you know?
Yep.
The pedal that's the oldest on my board for me, is a Kalamazoo Love pedal. I think I bought that, oh, it must've been the early 2010s. You know, I don't know. If we get into my shop history, there's a whole transition that happened, and I'd spent some time out of the business, but I started playing again 2011, 10, you know, getting back into it. And that was one of the first pedals I bought. And I really do, that's sifted out from a lot of overdrive pedals, though I've kind of lost focus on that. So I haven't been taking things home that grab me at work and trying them against it. But that's just like, if I need something really gainy, but still, you know, rich and classic sounding, I'll end up hitting that and maybe pushing it with one of the clean boost pedals into it. And if I really just need to go, you know, out of this world, you know, that does it. I don't use obviously my Tweed, you know, whatever custom amp has no reverb. I've got a Cusack Sweet Verb in there, you know, analog sound and reverb. I've got a, and I always stumble as Catalan Bread.
Caitlin Bread?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I've got the Bell Epoch Tape Echo. Love Tape Echo stuff. Goes all the way back, you know, when I was doing sound a lot. I for quite a while, I had a Space Echo on an aux on my front of house mixer, you know, some, you know, the right band, I'd bring that in for, you know, for some action on the snare or some really cool slap back on vocals or to really, you know, start calling the mothership. And
wow,
you know, I'd love to have a Tape Echo around, but this fits the bill and works pretty well. I've got a Voodoo Labs Voodoo Vibe TC rotary speaker simulator pedal, which is a cool design. I never come across one, and admittedly, just the look of it grabbed me when it came in. And I like the way it's got two knobs that you can like rotate with your toe to tweak the rotary speaker simulator yep. speed. And it just, so it gave me a little bit of flexibility without having to bend down and tweak knobs. And it gets really far out too. It's like, you know, when things get really weird, you get into that thing and the Tape Echo and all bets are off. And then I love, auto wah, you know, envelope filter stuff. But I'm running out of room, and, a Carl Martin Ottawa came through, which I'd also never seen, really clean design, small, and it's got a really great sound. I've been really happy with that pedal. So that's the, you know, that's what I got on the board. Now there's a couple other things that kind of, that I wanted to fit on there or have been on there or might end up being on there if I could cram them in. I've always been a big ZVEX fan. We were an early dealer at my old music store. And I wanted a wah probe forever. So I got a wah probe sitting back there. I got a month or two ago. Haven't even turned it on yet. I was just like, oh, I'm taking that. I've got a ZVEX Mastotron. That was another, you know, first getting back into it purchase. It's a little gnarly. I think for fuzz, I'm not going to go there probably moving forward. One of my favorite pedals ever is the ZVEX Seek Wah. Another one to just mix legend. In one. Yeah. Just killer pedal. And then an Earthquaker Grand Orbiter. That one's pretty fun too. Modulation that just can get really wacky, really quick. And, you know, for the music I like, you know, it's a handy one to have. So it's got to find a footprint. Yeah. So that's what I've got.
Yeah. That's a great board. And I think, you know, in pre-production, I think everybody should know that the first show you ever saw was Tom Petty, Dylan and the Dead. Is that right?
The first show I liked. Yeah. That okay. really knocked me out. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I was like, oh, we're cut from the same cloth. Also a big kind of dead fan, all, you know, Tom Petty too, and Dylan. And then, so let's touch on the envelope filter. Cause I'm always chasing envelope filters. I've gone through a ton. Do you have any favorites that you've seen come through the shop that are just like, that's the one? And when I think of envelope filters, I'm thinking kind of Garcia tones and things like that.
Yeah. You know, I've been a little bit obsessed with Mutron of late, and new, recent or vintage, you know, there's quite a few have come through since I've, when you get into like, you want to buy a new car and you're like, oh, okay. You know, all of a sudden you see them everywhere and you're like, oh, that car. Well, that's what happens with me a lot of times with the business is, well, these Mutron pedals are sick. And all of a sudden they just start coming in, and some of it's just cosmically weird. They just start showing up and then somehow they breed, and all of a sudden there's so many of them. A lot of times it's me sitting here on my chair, you know, at night going, oh, well, you know, we need some more pedals and might as well get stuff, that I want and like, and so I've been picking up a bunch of Mutron stuff. So I've got a Mutron 3 on this other board. I think you saw the picture I posted on Instagram recently. Yeah, that board belongs to my friend Tim Bloom. He's the he's, you know, one of the two front men of this band Mother Hips that's out of Chico. You know, they've been around since the early 90s when I first moved to California and ended up in a backyard at a party these guys were playing, and I, you know, it was like mind blown. And we're really good friends now after all these years. And so Tim loaned me, and I'm probably going to acquire from him, that big old pedalboard. It's made by Kid Candelario of Kids Cables, who did all of the Grateful Dead's pedalboards and stuff. He started on the road with them in 66, as I understand. And so Tim had that pedal board put together with its own looper and, you know, this gnarly aluminum frame, all totally custom made. It's got the Mutron volume wah pedal. It's got a modern Boostron 3, an octave divider, the Mutron 3, and a Phaser 2. And I grabbed that last time I was hanging out with Tim down in the Bay Area and brought it home. And I finally plugged it in last week. And I was just, my wife is like, "What? That is funky." I'm like, "Yeah, it's funky and it's psychedelic and it's kicking
butt. It's magic
all over the place." So yeah, it's pretty hard to beat. I mean, when you want to go back to that sound and whatever, you know, go, I don't know, P-Funk to Jerry or whatever, that's the Mutron stuff. I think it's the way to go.
Yeah, I went through that a little bit. I am a discombobulator, like a Qtron, the big one, the small one, Analog Man's envelope filter, which is really good. And I ended up with a new reissue Mutron that's got the high pass, low pass kind of button on it, and it's sounds great. I'm super stoked on it.
Yeah. Well, and the footprint and the audio quality of the new stuff is nice because admittedly that whole pedal board is noisy and quirky and weird, and you know, like the wah needs a little work, the sweep's not quite right on it. And but I mean, it's just, I don't know. If I acquire this thing from my buddy, I don't think I'm gonna be able to sell it because it's just so freaking cool and it's so tight and it's so wired perfectly. I mean, I'd either have to move it all as one piece because it almost feels like a crime to take kids' work apart. Either that or I'm gonna end up with two pedal boards.
Well, you're in the right place for two pedal boards because I was building a third one this morning before we got on the show. So we're amongst friends, we like to say. That's a heck of a board, and I love the idea that you're actually blending. Do you often blend the two amps? Because I run kind of a wet dry kind of rig with it's kind of dual mono, but you're actually going between the two amps. So do you ever split the difference and have them?
And it's great, like, you know, in a build up, you know, if you break a song down and then you're building back up, whether you're soloing or not, you know, to ease from clean to dirty slowly and bring in the effects and really build the emotion of a song, that's one way to use it. And, you know, subtly ramp from mellow to wow, you know, over the top. I love to do that. And yeah, sometimes there are just points you park in between, you know, you're looking for a crunchy rhythm and your pedals are, you know, the boosts and the overdrives, they're so finite, you know, it's on or off. And of course you can lean down and tweak it, but you know, in those moments, I just can't do that. So that gives me some flexibility to really go, you know, somewhere in between, not so binary, on, off, now I'm boosted, now I'm not, you know. It's really great. And that's been the key, is just to have, you know, to have one amp and be able to get clean headroom and killer output to distortion is really one of the things I think I see players struggle with the most. You know, I've got a few guys that come by the shop regularly that are performing every week, and they're like, "Man, they're tired of carrying big amps. They're tired of They're tired. They want their old tweet amp to be their anchor, but they can't clean it up, you know, or it's fine in the first set, and then the band really gets rocking, and then it's just dirty the whole second set, and it's, so it's just a great way to go, to have a whole bunch of freedom and flexibility. Yeah, this
you don't know how many times cats have walked across people's laps on the show. We've got two cats too, so you'll probably see him shortly.
It's all right in the podcast forum, but yeah, it's a little distracting.
Right. I use a lot of expression. Like, I always look for pedals that have expression pedal inputs to kind of be able to use, in a performative sense, control the mix of, often reverb is what I'm usually doing, is kind of controlling the mix of reverb. But I like what you're doing, by blending between the two tones, and two amps kind of class, or I guess jobs, which is cool. Well, that's an awesome tour of your pedal board. I can't wait to, I mean, I'll share the second one, the Mutron one. When I saw that on Instagram, I was like, this is fan club material here. This is a true fan. So tell us a little bit about the guitar shop. I mean, what's it like owning a guitar shop nowadays? Is it still magical? I mean, is it just great seeing all the stuff come through? I couldn't do it because I'd get high off my own supply. I would constantly be buying stuff. But tell us about the world of guitar shop ownership in a small little town, Chico.
It's as good as it's ever been. Better, perhaps. And I've been through the ringer on it, on music retail and e-commerce and everything. I've been at it since about 94, and always here in Chico since I moved here in 92 to go to recording school at Chico State. It's funny. It's like, I have one friend in particular, and if he listens, he'll know who I'm talking about. He's moving to the Midwest from LA, and he called me and he's like, "Hey, I'm looking at this property. I want to open a shop when I move out there." And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean about a shop? Like, what do you want to do?" He's like, and he's got a young kid and he's looking, you know, for a little life improvement out of the craziness of LA and all this stuff. I'm like, "Well, if you want to simplify your life, man, probably owning a music store in the classic sense of the word is probably not the way to go." And I can tell you personally, I opened a store with a friend, as a partner in 1995 when we were 24 years old here in Chico, and with like no money, total hard scrabble, you know, one of these stories you hear over and over. There was no cool music stores in town that we liked. We were finding gear for people already. I was doing sound for bands. We were playing in a band, and I'm like, "Well, you know, we can just get all this stuff for less if we like can get things wholesale, and we can open a store and we could probably do all right." And we opened it and it just took on a life of its own. It grew incredibly rapidly. It really was such a blast. We had the greatest time. And at that age, the work and the constant hustle bustle, you know, the people come through the door incessantly, you know, that keep you from really administrating a business, because you're hanging out, talking with them and showing them cool guitars and buying stuff and trading stuff. It didn't matter that maybe you had to stay 2 or 3 hours after and do bookkeeping or come in on Saturday and Sunday or just get behind forever and then all of a sudden freak out and spend 2 weeks straight in there, you know, losing your marbles trying to catch up. At some point, well, it was 2004, my daughter was born, my first kid. And I'd been doing shows all over the country, got into e-commerce early, and I realized, like, man, Christmas, for one, is like a nightmare. It's, you know, and I've got a kid now, and Christmas has to be fun. And I would work from before Thanksgiving till the end of January almost straight out, because Christmas is just where you make your money, and then you got tax season. And then you got guitar shows in January, and I'm like, this isn't going to work, you know, and overhead was really high. We moved into a really cool spot, but it was much bigger, and we were kind of forced to move, and the cost of doing business just started to get difficult. And being so into vintage, I always felt kind of strangled by the new brands that we were carrying, you know, Mesa Boogie, for instance. We were a boogie dealer. And like a lot of big brands, you sign up with Mesa Boogie and they're like, here's all the stuff you're going to buy. And it's going to come and you're going to buy it. And so they would, all of a sudden a truckload would show up, and they only did COD back then. And, you know, it'd be June 20th, a giant truckload of Mesa Boogie stuff shows up in the worst part of my season here in a college town. I had to write this huge check and be choked with Mesa Boogie all summer. And then some really cool vintage guitars would come in, and I Boogie would have all my money, and I couldn't buy the cool guitars, you know. And I don't know, all of these things, staffing, overhead, dealing with new stuff versus used and vintage, all collided. And I just decided this isn't for me anymore. And I closed the store in 2005. So my advice to my friend was, take a look at the way you're seeing music retail go. You know, he and I are into vintage stuff, and you don't need to really have a traditional brick and mortar open door, you know, store where you're wondering, well, should I close Monday or should I close Sunday? Well, Sunday sometimes busy. Maybe I should be open Sunday. Monday, you know, I should probably go in and get stuff done, you know, and find yourself working 7 days a week and losing your mind, you know? So Our shop, I've got it all set up like a store. You walk in there, it looks like a store. Guitars hanging all over, display case with pedals in it, amp room, acoustic room. But it's on appointment, and it's kind of stealthy. I reopened during just after COVID, and I had another business I was operating at the time, and we can get into that or not. But I was like, okay, I'm gonna emulate what I'd done in the latter 2000s, where it's just e-commerce, guitar shows focused, a lot of business to other dealers as well as retail, and on appointment, and people aren't, you know, I don't shun people. I don't want them to not come by, you know, I people aren't wasting my time, but I want to do e-commerce really right. And in order to do that, I have to have some times where I'm like, I can't have you come by today. We're too busy. So I feel like I've found this work-life balance to a certain degree in that concept, in the on appointment destination, you know, model. And we're doing e-commerce really well. We're detailing the guitars and the items we sell really comprehensively, which takes a lot of time. And I don't have to staff for salespeople, you know, who are sitting there just hoping somebody comes in today to buy something cool, you know, because they got to make their nut or whatever, you know. So it's I really like where we're at right now. It's really cool. And I don't know. I see so many shops flipping this way now
brick and mortar. A couple of my favorite shops, I'm in Colorado, so Wildwood Guitars went appointment only. And then also, is it Rainbow Guitars, I think, down in Tucson, Arizona is another cool shop. And they're also appointment only. And I thought it was like a byproduct of COVID, and maybe that was the initial, like the kind of the catalyst for it. But it seems like it is to maintain some sort of sanity and work-life balance. You need that as a shop owner, and they're really good about getting you in on appointments. It's not a problem. It just allows them to manage themselves. And it's, you know, both of them, I think, do a lot of e-commerce as well.
Yeah. No, we spend a few hours on every guitar that comes in, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you, you know, maybe 1.5 to 3 hours, depending on what we're looking at. So you can imagine, you know, how hard that would be to get anything on our website if we just dropped everything all day and, you know, we're working with people in the shop. It just becomes really hard, unless you want to be one of those dealers that takes like 3 pictures of a guitar and says, hey, email for more pictures if you're interested, or assumes that the guitar under the hood is all original and doesn't actually look, you know, to make sure it is, which I just can't do.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your website, before we were getting on the show, I was surfing around your site, and I was like, oh, cool, there's a Marshall 410. I really want a 410 cabinet. Sold out. I was like, oh, man, yeah. Bummer. Yeah. But your site is great. I mean, you have a really incredible breadth of instruments, effects pedals, which is part of the fan club, obviously, some like studio gear and stuff. So, you know, what is, I mean, one of the questions that, Instagram had asked is like, what are some of the coolest things you've seen come through, you know, your shop or just in your history of, guitars? And we could speak about guitars, but also we could also focus on effects.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did. Yeah. I saw on the question prompts, you know, what pedal, I think there was two questions that I can answer with that. It was, there was one like the pedal you absolutely have to have, or
yeah,
what pedal changed you or changed your life?
And yeah, yeah,
there's a couple, I guess, but really, Univibe, like an actual legit vintage Univibe. I had a couple come through my store. I haven't had one in years, but I had a couple come through that I reluctantly sold, and they were mint clean, totally working great. I a lot of times punch myself in the face for not keeping one of those back in the day. I'm definitely conservative about what I keep to a certain degree, learning a lot of lessons about that and trying to be in retail and being a keeper of things. That's one thing I'm going to seek and will find and will own. One thing I've never owned and really want at least to just goof with for a while is the Mutron biphase, like with the expression pedal, the whole thing. And then one thing I didn't think I really loved, but now it's confirmed, is the Vox Tone Bender. I've got a really nice one in the case at work right now that I'm just trying to ignore. It's a nice clean one, really sellable.
I saw it on the site and I was like, this thing is clean.
And God, it sounds so good. And really, I mean, with the hole I have in my board currently, that would be the ideal, you know, thing to put in there, except it is big. But yeah, those three are on my list, you know, and they will be had eventually.
What are some guitars that you've like your favorite guitar you've seen come through, or just, you know, if you're at a show or whatever it is?
The favorite thing I've got right now in the shop, it's just totally mind-blowing. I've got a 57 Strat with a 57 Vibralux that was a one owner piece with the original receipt, the original cover for the amp, everything in the case or the guitar. It's probably of the top three instruments I think I've ever had to offer to people. Came to me through a player and friend back east. He's a Nashville guy. And I don't know. I just saw, he waved it by me and I'm like, oh God, how much is that? We're just going to have it. It's almost immaculate. And it's like the perfect Strat with the V-neck 57. It's light, it's gorgeous. It's been played enough to get through the lacquer on the fingerboard, but not so much that it's all dirty, and certainly nobody's, you know, goofed with anything on it. And the amp is just absolutely glorious. It looks like a custom shop reissue. The amp is just spooky clean. So that's a current thing that we have. The other favorite that we have that I have in stock right now is I have a 62 Epiphone Coronet, which is kind of one of those sort of under the radar for a lot of people. I think mostly because you just don't see many of them. And then the ones you do see are the mid 60s ones with the Batwing headstock, and they aren't necessarily the coolest looking guitar, you know. Maybe an SG Junior or Les Paul Junior, you know, jumps out maybe as a cooler design, you know, visually for most people. But that 62 Coronet is lights out, and it's the best one for testing amps. And it's just an absolutely phenomenal guitar. Single P90, you know, wraparound tailpiece, just, you know, all mahogany. It just rips.
I almost feel like if Joe Bonamassa does listen to the FX Pedal Fan Club, he would be calling you about that Strat right now.
Yeah. Well,
like, that's his world.
Yeah. And I paid a lot for it. I'm asking a lot for it. And I don't think I'm asking more than anyone else, really. I mean, I've had numerous requests to tear the amp and the guitar apart. And the guy's name is on the receipt. He made a little metal placard that he put on the amp with the same name. I'm like, what? No. These things cannot be divorced. If someone buys them from me and does it, fine. but I'm not bringing a pox or a curse on my house by taking these things apart. It's just cosmically, these things belong together. And, but I've seen Vibrolux is that clean from some, you know, from some dealers I do business with, some of the big guys, where they're asking like 15 to 20 grand for a version of this amp, this clean. And, you know, we've got it up, you know, it's in the mid 70K range, but it's a 57 strat. It's like the one of the consummate strats.
It's the one.
Yeah.
What color is it, out of curiosity?
Two-tone sunburst.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's just, it's a museum piece. And so I think that may be a block to sale, is that it's so clean that you're really going to be cautious to play it and enjoy it, which, you know, the trend is definitely played, kind of hammered. I can do anything with this guitar. Guitars are really easy to sell right now. I mean, if you're priced right. And then there's always a crowd for minty, crazy clean. I got one cleaner than my friend clean guitars and stuff. I just haven't found the guy, but it's okay too, because it, you know.
That means you still have it.
Yeah. And and I have a birthday rule with guitars. I don't like guitars, and I don't like inventory to sit around for a year. Birthdays are bad in their shop, unless it's my staff or whatever. But
sure.
That guitar and amp, it'll linger. Someday somebody will offer me like a pile of trades or something, which I always do, you know, something will happen. But yeah, those are cool. And then the other, you know, we can get into it as a long story, but I took a long time off the business. You know, I got personally wrecked in the Great Recession, like so many people did. I got out of the guitar business, went into other work, and I came back into the business during COVID. Because I was sitting there at my other business I now own, just thinking, wow, I'm probably gonna get wrecked again. Great. You know, those early days, and my wife was a teacher, and the kids, you know, she's teaching at home, the kids are learning at home. And I'm like, I'm gonna go to the shop. And even though there's nothing to do. And so I'd grab a six pack after lunch, and you know, because beer was essential and could be had. And I just dial up old friends, you know, like we all did, connecting with people during lockdown. And all my guitar buddies were like, man, great to hear from you. You know, if you find any guitars, let us know. We're all out because of COVID. And I was like, okay. Well, I heard that two, maybe three times. And I just said to myself, well, you know, I never wanted to stop doing the guitar business. My hand was just forced. And I just got back into it. And it just picked right up. It was 12, 13 years I was out of the business, and everything just fell in line. And then I was trolling eBay, or not eBay, Reverb one day, and this Nocaster, legitimate vintage Fender Nocaster, original case, bridge cover, all this stuff, you know, was there from a dealer that I was familiar with in the Midwest. And I made a call, and I was like, this is my I'm back guitar, you know, and I bought it and brought it in. And that's when I got my Instagram account going, you know, got everything set up for the business. I already had the website going, and here we go. You know, I've got 12, 14 guitars and this freaking Nocaster that looks like, well, it looked like that Strat I was just talking about. Amazing. The cleanest one you'll ever find. And, that's a pinnacle guitar for me. You know, it didn't stick around very long. It was right in that real frothy part of COVID. And I took a million pictures of this thing, 'cause I'm like, I'm going to take this guitar apart. I'm going to do it once. Nobody's going to have to ask me, could you just get one more picture of the back of that pickup so I can make sure it's right, whatever. I posted, I think like 100 pictures, and I got a call from Nacho Baños, who wrote the Blackguard book. Who'd I'd met in the mid 2000s when I had another really legendary Blackguard at a Dallas guitar show. And he called, and he's, if you've ever looked at Nacho's site, or if you've ever had a Nacho Telecaster yourself and looked at the thumb drive of pictures he sends you, like he's as into the photography almost as he is into the guitars. And that's how you make the books. Like those books he's written are just incredible. And he's like, well, Chuck, you must have known that I'd want this guitar when you took all those pictures. And I laughed, you know, because I knew how he rolled. And we did a big trade. I got some really cool guitars from him. I ended up ordering a nacho caster, which I own, you know, I got a humbucker in the neck, you know, model that he made for me. But that no caster, it's in the pine caster book that he put out. I forget, well, it's in there with a credit or whatever. It's in there amongst all the other ridiculously amazing guitars he photographed for that book series. But yeah, Telecasters are one of those things. Telecasters and Jazzmasters are like, I'm weak for him. And that guitar was just absolutely out of this world.
That's a great, I love the comeback story. You know, it seems like it wasn't not only just a timing thing, but it felt like it was part of your missing part of your heart or missing part of who you were. And so it's great to hear the comeback story and the success and the way you're doing it now. Actually, this is funny. You talk about humbuckers in the neck. Cause one of the questions was, why is the, or what's the greatest guitar ever made? And why is it a 72 Deluxe Telecaster? That was great.
I, you know, LOL and all of that stuff. I'm not a big fan of, but I literally, yeah, there was almost a spit take when I read that one. I think I know who that was, but I was just like, I told my friend Rick last night, I'm like, I read that off to him and we both died laughing, and I'm just going to use that for a whole bunch of stuff like that.
That's a t-shirt, right? That's awesome. A coffee mug, merch. I mean, that's a great, great, great moment.
And he's not far off base with that question either, because that is a really awesome guitar. And I was talking with my buddy Tim Bloom, you know, this morning. He bought like a parts caster version of that guitar, and it fits right in. You know, he's got a bunch of stuff, cool guitars. And that's a guitar that, you know, when somebody says they have all the guitars they need, I'm always like, well, contrary, you know, and that's one that you can add. You've got a Tele, you got a Strat, you got a Les Paul, you got an SG. Well, you don't have a Tele Deluxe or a Tele Custom, so you're not done yet.
Yeah, you're not done yet. So I got you. I'm just going to go through a couple of these because it feels like some might be inside jokes. I don't know if we're going to get into the meaning of life, but it might sound, I'm just going to say it's effects pedals and guitar shops right now. You know, so I think there was one question about like, I don't know if this is why you might be appointment based only, but you know, how do you get an education on the feeling of vintage guitars without being a customer that wastes your time?
I looked at the person who posted that question to see if they were local, see if I'm self-conscious about the on appointment business model, because I do not want it to be like, we're too busy for you. You know, that's really not the thing. It really is, you know, meaning of life, quality of life. I mean, I travel a lot too, and I've tried to really make my business work for my guys too. I've got my old manager in my store went and worked for a big grocer for 17 years after I closed the shop, and he became available right when I needed him. So I hired him back. And he's got a side gig. And my buddy Tim, you know, he's old enough to retire if he wants to. He can work or not. And he likes to work early and leave early. And you know, and we kind of push and slush this around. So I, you know, I view it as great for us, but I also view it as excellent for the customer. If somebody makes an appointment with me, I don't triple it up. The space isn't huge. I've got 4,000 square feet, but 2,000 is really the where you look at and enjoy the gear. So somebody just sets up a time, they've got the place to themselves. And I'll be like, hey, here's the four guitars you want to try. These three amps are all set up. You got a question, grab us. Otherwise, I'm going to print some shipping labels. Tim's going to take some pictures of some guitars. And Brian's going to go walk a dog that, you know, for a client, and he'll be back in an hour. Go crazy, you know, and we shut the door and we just let him go. So the best way to get accustomed to vintage guitars is just that is, you know, you got to go out and get your hands on them. The idea of them is and the allure is like ubiquitous, right? I mean, the first cool guitar I saw when I came to Chico, it was for sale in the paper, and the guy is a friend who had it for sale, and I went over and looked at it, and he wouldn't sell it to me, and I was completely flummoxed. But while we were playing it and talking about it, he just decided he couldn't sell it, and that just set a fire in me to like go out and find something besides my American Standard Strat that I was playing at the time that like really grabs me. And that was what got me going, you know? And so you got to play them, you got to touch them. And if that person or anyone else is local or even, you know, from the greater Northern California area, we just need to know when you're coming so you don't show up and find that we are buying a collection in LA or we're in Dallas at a guitar show or Tim's sick or didn't feel like coming to work or Brian's walking a dog, you know. And you can come in and spend all dang day and dig in and have a good time. There's no other way. Or go to a guitar show. Go to a vintage guitar show. I'm constantly stunned. We have this great vintage guitar show in Marin County at in San Rafael that's been going on for years. And I opened, I opened my store, pardon me, and was open 3 or 4 years before I really realized it was going on and had been for years. It's 2.5 hours drive from here. And I have so many customers and friends, people I did sound for, people who make money playing guitar, who've never been to the show. And I'm like, man,
is that show actually? Cause like we talked earlier about being kind of mutual. Well, you're a friend of Larry Craig's. I know of Larry Craig, but, you know, when's that show? I'd love to go visit it.
It's January. I think it's usually the second weekend in January.
Okay. Just all roughly. That's good to know. Cause if it was like today, I was like, I got to catch a flight. I got to go in this show cause it sounds amazing. But vintage guitar shows are wild. I've only been to a few, and the one I went to is coincided with NAMM because we were at NAMM, and I'm looking at Telecasters, deluxe Telecasters, and I was like, another, you know, you kind of pick them up and you play them. And I heard this other guy next to me. I was like, wow, this guy's pretty good at ZZ Top stuff. And I was like, oh my God, that's Billy Gibbons playing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like everybody, you know, we always say that if you love effects or guitars, you have a lot in common with people. And like, you go to shows and like, that your heroes are shopping for guitars too. It's wild.
Yeah. You never know who you're going to see. A lot of times I'm kind of oblivious and these people walk through or I'll talk to them and I don't know. I get in my head and I'm trying to make sure everybody's happy and everything's flowing. But there's all kinds of people come through. People come through with things for sale. They sell them to us. They sell them to other people walking around. It's not a great forum to like plug in and really get intimate with a guitar because it's loud and it's crazy. And sometimes it's just flat out too busy. But I mean, it's a great place to see a bunch of stuff, start to connect your visual appeal of a guitar with how it feels when you grab it. I mean, you know, there are different kinds of dealers. I'm the kind of guy who's like, well, it's really too busy right now, but come back and plug this thing in, man, by all means, and plug it into that, and that, and see what it sounds like, you know. It's I don't know. I call it like a traveling guitar museum. It's I can't think of anything else if I wasn't in the business that I would love to do on a Saturday is just go to San Francisco, get a hotel room Friday night, go out to dinner, wake up in the morning and look at guitars all day. I mean, it's ridiculous.
In Fairfax and San Rafael is beautiful. I mean, it's a gorgeous little town. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're fun. We just got back from Nashville. We're headed to Dallas soon. The Arlington show in Texas is one of the granddaddy shows. Probably that might be my favorite show, except for San Rafael, if for no other reason, it's so close and all my, you know, old employees and friends and everybody ends up showing up at that one. It's just a great time. And so, make an appointment. If you got an on appointment only shop, make an appointment. My unofficial slogan is no purchase necessary to win. You can come into the shop and try stuff. You don't have to apologize on the way out the door that you didn't buy anything. It's fine. That's totally great. You know, it should be that way.
Totally. We had another question just before we get into the dice roll questions, because we're coming up on time. We had a question from TV Odin, I think is the name. Is there a market for 60s Guyatone guitars? And if so, should I keep it as original as possible or should I feel free to refret and replace tuning machines? I think it's just this is a pretty blanket question, or a question I think all vintage guitar owners have. But specifically to 60s Guyatone stuff.
Yeah, the Guyatone guitars are niche, but they're really, really cool. An old friend of mine who first introduced me to the guitar shows and into the business. He passed away a couple years ago, real mentor of mine. He was really into them. I had no idea what they were. They were completely off the radar for me. But yeah, there's a nostalgia. Well, there's another thing I always say is there's a nerd for everything. So if you've got a guitar, a Tesco, a Guyatone, there's some cool old Magnatones that kind of remind me of the same Guyatone vibe that are really, really cool. And they look sometimes or feel like they aren't really that valuable or maybe that desirable. You play them against a Jazzmaster, a Strat, or a Tele, and you're like, well, this is, you know, funky guitar. Well, they're funky and they're cool. And there are definitely customers and people who want those guitars. I would say if you're into that guitar at a level, you know, well below what it's worth, I'd probably just hang on to it. I would definitely try to keep it as original as possible. That's huge. Changing tuners, if you can do it without changing any of the holes in the headstock, super important. Keeping it in tune and being able to play it is obviously important. I'd say if you're going to modify a guitar, look to modify a guitar that is already modified. And then you're not taking that prime example and knocking it back a couple notches and finding out later that you really disappointed yourself by devaluing it. The frets, I'm really finding, I mean, all these old guitars need frets. All these old amps need filter caps. Old speakers need recones. It used to be that I would catch grief from people with an old Tweed amp that had some caps replaced, the power cord replaced, and the speaker recone. And now when I find a really prime, perfect, original example of a Tweed amp and it's running right, and I do some testing on the caps and everything's good, I'll keep it that way. But I put right in my ad, my listing, I'll say, hey, if you want a grounded power cable, if you want the filter caps changed, we'll do it before we ship it. And more often than not now these days, people are like, yeah, please do that. My amp guy is too busy or he moved away and I want to use this thing. And where I'd say in the mid 2000s, some of that was kind of the kiss of death. Frets on a guitar, if you have them done, just have them done right. Don't put jumbo frets on a vintage guitar. You can. I've got a really good customer that does that because he plays his guitar. He puts jumbo frets on everything. Custom shop, vintage Teles, vintage Strats. I have an ES-295 from the 50s that he put jumbo frets on. I happen to like him on that. It actually is working. I wouldn't have done it, but it's done. You can always refret it, but, you know, it's not free. But unplayable frets are terrible. Jumbo frets on a Guyatone would just be totally weird. So just mind how you tackle that process and have somebody who find somebody who actually knows how to do it. Don't go with somebody who's like, yeah, I guess I can pull this off. Don't do that.
Cool. So that answered, I think, all the questions from the group chat. So I appreciate everybody submitting questions and asking Chuck here. We're going to roll the dice for our common question. I'm going to roll it real quick. We came up with a 3. So that is, that's the question about what pedal changed you. So you kind of already answered that because you really feel like you missed out on those Univibes. We've talked about your envelope filter. So I'm going to roll it again, Chuck. 2. Okay. This is your all-time favorite fuzz pedal. What is your all-time favorite fuzz pedal?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be the Tone Bender. I mean, that's a
fuzz really? Pedal. That one that's in there is just...
Oh, well, that one in particular is super sweet. And I've had 5 or 6 come through over the last year, and that one's just bitching. I like that gray box of that era. But the overall for fuzz, I think that's the most usable, most sonically awesome, you know, and just an iconic pedal. I mean, come on, you know, it's, I don't know.
It's a pedal. It's not a pedal that just changed you. It like kind of fundamentally changed the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's always awesome when you look inside too, and you got this big killer looking, you know, Sputnik looking pedal and the board's like this big inside and you're like, right. Well, they could have made it smaller, but it wouldn't have been cooler if they did.
Right. Exactly. So we're going to talk to you in a second with some bonus questions, but thanks again for joining us, talking all things Mahar guitars. I'll have everything in the show notes so people can find you on Instagram, shop, make appointments, see you at guitar shows. Yeah. So thanks for joining us, and let's get into the bonus questions.
My pleasure. Thanks.
All right. Shout out to Chuck at Mahar's Vintage Guitars. If you're in the Chico, California area, make sure to visit him and set an appointment to do so. And if you're not, make sure to go to the website and check out what he has for sale there. He takes so many photos and writes such great copy. Not only is it a way to make a confident purchase with a vintage instrument, it's also just a great way to learn about them. So I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. Find us at Effects Pedal Fan Club on the gram, and please share it with a bandmate. Let's just share it with a bandmate this week. Help us grow the community. And if you'd like to become an official member of the fan club and support it, you can find us at Patreon. So patreon.com/EffectsPedalFanClub. That's it for this week, and we will see you next week here at the fan club.